I'm staying at a friend's in Brooklyn, and I don't have notes or a computer screen in front of me. But as I recall, the big concert, and this is going to be a real first for the city as far as tying it in with the UFO Festival, will be Friday night. It will be in the Pearson Auditorium, which is far and away the most professional, comfortable, acoustically solid hall in the city. And it will be headlined by the Jefferson Starship, which will include original members of the Jefferson Airplane. They have promised to bring along Country Joe, a legendary lead singer of Country Joe and the Fish, one or two original members of the Grateful Dead, and they've promised a few surprises in terms of other heroes of Woodstock. And on Saturday night, which unless I'm... well, wait, maybe it's the other way around. The night of the 3rd, I guess that's Friday, is the big 4th of July fireworks exhibit. And it will certainly be as good as any municipality or town or city's 4th of July fireworks. However, ours will be followed by a free concert outdoors with the Temptations as the featured act. So that will be on the night of the 3rd. The night of the 4th will be this huge professional concert, and members of the all of the singing groups will be available for signings, to mix with folks. They'll be in the parade. Obviously, this doesn't have anything really to do with UFOs, and as we discussed on Wednesday night, this event is, by a quirk of history, it is attached at the hip to the 4th of July. Whatever the heck crashed out on the plains of San Augustine and the other location outside of Roswell, near, as my best information and scholarship suggests, came down on like the 1st or the 2nd of July. So it will forever be caught up with the 4th of July in this very lovely city. And it is a several-fold event, culturally as well as educationally. You have a very serious and scholarly world-class UFO conference that MUFON is sponsoring along with the city with a great lineup of speakers and topics. And then you have this huge, well, festival with, I think, probably two dozen major kid-friendly events, every kind of costume contest and competition imaginable, a parade, the staging of a stage reading of a feature-length two-act play by a very distinguished playwright who's a friend of mine and has done Broadway and off-Broadway stuff for many years, as well as regional, set in Roswell, the summer of 1947. And back and Washington, D.C., with major characters that we know from the real events dealt with in a semi-fictional manner, because who the heck knows about some of the exchanges. We will also have a Tex-Mex musical festival. There's going to be a film festival. The high points as far as film goes is Paul Davids, the co-producer and writer of the very fine movie Roswell that starred Kyle MacLachlan as Jesse Marcel Sr. and also featured Martin Sheen, will be shown, but with Paul right there and Jesse Marcel Jr. And it was screened last year, Joe, and I must tell you, it's a film I have in my DVD library, and I've seen it a number of times. First, the novelty of seeing a really good print on the big screen was terrific, because it is a very powerful and thoughtful movie. But to play it for the hometown crowd and know that there were people in that audience that were directly related to people who were characterized in that film, and that it all happened right in that area and right there, was very emotional at points. It was really moving. And if that isn't enough, kind of the filmatic feature of the UFO conference, which will be held in the exact same space, the Pearson Auditorium, will feature a screening of a very good print of the Fire in the Sky movie, the film based on Travis Walton's extraordinary experience and book about his abduction. Travis does not, he has not appeared at UFO conferences regularly in years. He's a very private person, and I don't know what people think, but he is still, he still does forestry work in the Snowflake, Arizona area. He is, you know, he's not a big mouth like me. He's very circumspect, tremendously distinguished, incredible figure. But for whatever reasons, he has agreed, and I'm delighted, to not just be there, but to accompany a showing of this film and then discuss some very delicate aspects of it, namely that when you sell a book as a film, even to somebody who is really well-meaning and who has made it clear that they want to represent your story as accurately as possible, it is out of your hands. And the part of the film that, in my estimation, does not work, or work nearly as well as it could have, is this confabulated, in parts nonsensical, paranoid, alien experience sequence. It's a small segment of the total film, but the director decided, oh, we've seen this regular abduction thing, it's been done, well, I'm going to think of something new. Otherwise, I think it's a very powerful film, and in some ways, really one of the finest films of its kind ever made, because of how it deals with the impact that an over-the-top experience like this can have on a community, on people, in this case, even on law enforcement. The buddies that he was with, who he was doing forestry work with when he was, you know, hit by this blue beam of light, taken on board, they all observed it while it was happening, of course, went into a tremendous panic. And the next thing in the real world was that he was gone, I think, for 4 or 5 days. And law enforcement was on the edge of accusing these men, who were all friends, of murdering him and hiding his body. And, of course, he shows up, you know, all those days later. So I don't know if this has ever happened before. I've never heard of this film being shown with Travis there. And I don't know if it'll ever happen again, frankly. So that's going to be a real gem.
Well, I would say, I think that's worth attending the whole conference over. Is that?
It's going to be really special.
Are they going? Let me ask you this, Peter. Are they like, okay, I know they're going to show the film, but they wouldn't happen to be going to like film Travis talking about the film, or like put it on a CD or anything? Because I know it's one of those rare things that we'll probably never see again. And if we do,
well, that's a great question. And that's a perfect question to confirm with Alejandro. As far as I know, MUFON has arranged for a terrific local videographer in town, as is often the case at conferences, to film all of the speakers. And then, of course, to put them on DVD and make them available to conferees and the public. My only question would be here, and maybe because it's, you know, a one-time scholarly showing, New MUFON's a nonprofit and all that stuff, but because that film, the rights to the film, belong to a production company somewhere, somebody's going to sign a waiver, but I would hope that that would happen. Although he's not going to be commenting, now that I think of it, he's not going to be commenting during the film. I think it would be very interesting to package, you know, a DVD of his Q&A following the film with, you know, a high-quality, professionally produced copy of it. That would be an amazing little box set, don't you think?
I actually think it would be excellent. You know, for some reason, I keep seeing questions about Rendlesham going by while we're talking. They're having a discussion in the virtual auditorium about the Rendlesham Forest case while we're talking about Roswell. Evil. It says, I've seen someone, it says, Rendlesham, once Peter has got his immediate Roswell commitments out of the way, he indicated the desire to bring the main players of Rendlesham incident together without Colonel Holt. I guess what they want to know is, can he indicate where this may be, and for the audience, what could be achieved by this?
Sure. Number one, let me clarify something, which is, I would love for Colonel Hall to be involved in this from the ground up. The problem is he has, in my estimation, to a degree, been playing these individuals against each other.
Oh, yeah.
And I had a long talk with one of the key witnesses, not Larry, but another one, whose name comes up in Lefty Eastgate, not 3 days ago. And he underscored that that was his experience, not his thought. I received a press release last night that I'm trying to remember who the writer is, but it's a screenwriter who has been working with Mr. Hall to produce a script for, I'm not completely clear whether it's a film treatment of the Rendlesham story or of Mr. Hall's take on it or a documentary. But he is still very much in the game, and right now it is just an idea and a desire that I share with some of the witnesses and some of the more committed investigative writers and researchers who have put so much time into trying to give us a better idea of what happened. I will tell you, Joe, and I want to thank whomever it is whose question I'm responding to here, because I've been on record more times than I can say that this is the most significant case in terms of possibly cracking the code, so to say. It's one where it has something of everything in the Rendlesham Forest incident. There are numerous witnesses. They're alive. They're well. They very much have had experiences in so many cases that have not left them, that are still remembered, and some cases, in some ways, that they're still at effect of. There's also, again, a core of writers and investigators who have put so much work into this, and right now it's all in the talk stage. What we really need is a certain amount of networking among individuals who were with the 81st Tactical Wing at RAF Bentwaters, and one of the witnesses is beginning to explore that right now. We also need, ideally, a conference venue, an experienced organizer, and as far as I'm concerned, I could care less whether it's in America or the United Kingdom. My feeling is wherever it happens, we'll get a foothold. Will realize this could really go commercially viable in a way, because you can't produce these things if you're going to lose money, as well as scholarly and of genuine value and adding to our pool of information. In some cases, bringing together guys who have literally not been in the same room since the nights that they were involved, which is, you know, who knows what could come up. I'm just amazed at what I've even learned, quite frankly, in the last 2 months on top of 20-odd years' work on this particular case. Ideally, also, it'd be wonderful to find a backer who would say, right, it's going to cost X to produce. I will lay it out. If we lose money, I'll write it off. If we don't, great. So I promise you and your listeners that as this develops, and I think the next jump or the next possible sort of breakthrough will be sometime in September when I'm back in England speaking at a conference there, going back down to Rendlesham Forest, meeting with some researchers, hopefully another witness or two, and I will report back to you guys in October when I'm back in the States, and that's a promise.
Yeah, keep me informed, because you know I always love talking about this stuff and keeping up on
it. You bet.
And, you know, you always remember, you always have another option now that we have all these extra phone lines that we can start using in the near future. If you can't get them all in one place, because I learned a long time ago, sometimes it's easier to get everybody on a telephone than it is to actually get them physically in one location. You know, because, I don't know, we've tried a couple times to get a select group of people together. I never could get them in to come down to one spot. Maybe if the money was the right, they might, but it was easy to get them on the phone. You know, get 5, 6, 7 on the phone, let them go at it. Besides that, they seem to have less trouble getting along with each other when they're not in the same room.
Exactly. And time has softened that a bit, and I think in cases where it really hasn't, it has opened the possibilities. It is now, gosh, it's 29 years, 28 and a half years since the incident originally occurred. That's a lifetime for a lot of people. And most of these guys, it's most of their lifetime.
I was 18 years old when that happened. Damn, I was just a pup.
Well, most of the guys that were involved were 18, 20 years old or a little bit older.
Yeah, that's I didn't think about that. That's true. I mean, they were all enlisted people on the NFBI, little puppies.
He hits me every once in a while because I think of them as highly trained, extremely competent military security specialists, whether they were law enforcement or security cops. But most of them were still kids, looking at it from, you know, our chronological point of view. And it doesn't matter how much training you had, you know, it was such a shattering event, and I'm underscoring this here, that many of these men are still experiencing directly and indirectly physiological and psychological, emotional reverberations from what happened to them almost 30 years ago. That's not being overdramatic. That's simply a fact.
Well, speaking of this, Paul Price, if you're listening to me right now, if you listen to the show, I'll give you all a call after the program. We have a new program starting either next Friday or after that's going to be following Angela's, but I was supposed to call him, but since I'm on air, that's going to be a little hard. So, Paul, if you're listening to the show, I'll give you a call when after Alejandro gets off in a little while, and then I'll call you and let you know about it. For our listeners in New Orleans, I hope everybody's enjoying the program tonight in 105.3 FM. I hope everybody has nice, clear audio. I see the weather was nasty, nasty earlier, but it is quite beautiful outside right now in the city. I couldn't tell you what temperature is, but it's pretty. It's probably hot as hell, but it's pretty. Anyway, enough about all of that. But Rendlesham always has this thrill. I mean, I'd love to get together with y'all again on that and talk about that in the near future, but I know that's not what we're here to talk about tonight. I just got an email saying, I thought we were talking about what's going on in Roswell. Well, guys, we're talking about that, and Peter's been on four or five times. If you don't hear what you need tonight, you can always go to the Roswell site or one of the other many shows this month that you can catch and find out what's going on. But I would suggest...
Remember also, at any time, you can and should visit, whether or not you're considering attending or just want to learn more about what will be happening there, UFOConferenceRoswell.com. That's www.UFOConferenceRoswell.com. And as we know, I mean, Roswell is a good-sized town. It is a city, technically, 53-odd thousand people. It's in a very dramatically beautiful part of New Mexico. And, you know, I'm not going to not let folks know about the other things that are going on. The the International UFO Museum and Research Center on Main Street there will be going their own way as always and producing a very Roswell-focused conference. We certainly have some speakers in the terrific City MUFON conference that will be discussing aspects of the events of the summer of 1947, but they, appropriately, that's their mandate. They remain more laser beam focused on that, so they'll have a good lineup of speakers and events and guests. And then there is the fundamentalist Christian religious UFO conference that will also be taking place. So you're dealing with three separate full-length conferences with their own complements of speakers, special guests, special events. What things, if you're not a serious follower of the subject, go there and have a good time. If you are a committed student of ufology, go there. Attend the conference or conferences of your choice. You can certainly mix and match if you want. Enjoy the fun part. All of these wonderful speakers are going to be accessible. You've also got a world-class rock concert and one of the greatest legendary Motown groups of all time, which I am so excited about. I feel a little like a kid. The Temptations, oh, my God. And I understand that, you know, a number of quirky guests, including Hank Williams Jr., is going to be showing up. We're going to be having... Malcolm McDowell, the star of Clockwork Orange and many other extraordinary films, will be a featured guest at the museum. The city is having quite a number of wonderful personalities from television. Kids will have Marvel superheroes. It is a culturally schizophrenic 4 days. And as we talked about on Wednesday, if UFOs are real and the implications are what we imagine, and that is a view I firmly subscribe to, then for Mr. and Mrs. Average America, who don't think about this as much as we do, if they do start to contemplate, can bring up some anxiety, and certainly natural for humans to deal with that with, some nervous humor or joking or little green men jokes. And so here's a chance to blow off some steam at the expense of these other intelligences. More to the point, and a bit from another direction, is the subjects of UFOs, aliens, extraterrestrials, from other planets, other dimensions, other times, whatever, but especially the extraterrestrial hypotheses, have ingrained themselves so deeply into the fabric of popular culture. And not just here, this is endemic in countries around the world, that it almost seems, just like the most sociologically, anthropologically natural thing in the world. It's amazing that these things haven't happened sooner, but as we know, there are very few cities that can honestly lay claim. Maybe there's something going on an annual basis in Bonnybridge, Scotland, a city with the highest ratio of sightings in the United Kingdom. But probably not, because it's not like there was a Bonnybridge event. They just have a very high ratio of sightings, like the old Gulf Breeze did, and then they seem to go someplace else. I should also mention that although I can't give you the exact information right now, in early September, the city, small town actually, of Exeter, New Hampshire, world famous for the incidents at Exeter in 1965, will have its first modest but very well put together UFO conference and UFO festival. And I'm delighted for the same reason that I wish Roswell all the best on this. It's a chance to educate people. And in these more dodgy economic times, it is a chance for a select number of municipalities to take something special that they have and run with it and give us a chance to support these communities, help them economically while we have a terrific weekend, learn some stuff, meet some speakers that we respect and admire, or, get our book signed or chat with a researcher whose work you followed, see some enjoyable film treatments of the subject and documentaries, and some science fiction stuff, too. Again, we touched on a number of things on Wednesday, Joe, and I was, for most of my career, and I've been in it for more than 30 years, one of those people who, call me an elitist, but I really looked down my nose at anything like the idea of a UFO festival, not that I would have ever had anything to do with one, and a world-famous ufologist who is a good friend of mine said a couple of weeks ago to me, I would have never gotten involved in something like this. The subject is too serious to be put in the context of a quote-unquote festival. And in fact, had an experience that made them feel a bit otherwise and softened their point of view on that.
Well, it was like with Roswell. I never had a problem with Roswell because of the 4th of July weekend. To me, I think you're getting the best of both worlds here. You're getting a nice big party, and you're getting a buttload of ufologists, left or right, kind of way of saying it. Technically, guys, y'all are getting a huge amount of ufologists. You've got the festival. Everybody's going to be speaking at the festival. You got Julie Sluice's group over at the Roswell Museum. By the way, while I'm thinking about that, the Roswell Museum probably has one of the best collections of anywhere except for maybe Ohio State or Penn State's museum. Of anywhere. I could spend years in their library just going through videos.
Well, I couldn't agree with you more. I'm like you. I'm not just an avid reader. I am a book lover. I'm a book collector and an archivist. And their library blew my mind. They even have a part-time librarian. It's all Dewey Decimal Systems. Yes, there may be a handful of university collections and a couple of libraries underground in the greater Beltway area that have at least as good ones.
Yeah.
But I have never seen a better UFO library in my life.
Well, that's one of the kickers about the museum in Roswell. You might, Penn State may have a bigger one, but you're not going to have ufologists on staff. Now, Julie has ufologists on staff, and during the festival, not only you got ufologists on staff, but you've got some really big names, Stanton Friedman, Daryl Sims, Javon Smith.
Yep.
I mean, these are all leaders in the field that are going to be speaking there, and will be more than willing to help you with what's going on in Roswell and the museum. They will also tell you, I know all of these people personally, and everyone will tell you to attend the festival as well. I mean, they're not going to tell you to go down there while they're speaking, mind you, but still.
Sure.
All these people work together. I know there's been some hard feelings between the festival and the museum in the past, but all the ufologists are friends, guys. I know...
With the rarest exceptions, even when we don't get along,
yeah.
I mean, even when we don't fully agree on, you know, somebody's theory or something, there's a cordiality, there's
yeah.
goodwill. We're looking to work. You know, this is not the easiest way in the world to try to do some good work in the research community, and actually, for some of us pinheads, to actually try to make a living doing it. Keep your day job, folks. Don't be like me. I am very proud of what I've been able to do, and there are a handful of us that actually do this more or less full time.
Yeah.
But, you know, we hear each other's lectures whenever possible. I mean, I'll be sort of glued into the MUFON conference for most of the time because I'm actually
emceeing
it, then we'll be moderating their panel discussion. But we also, Saturday afternoon, I think at noon, we will be opening and making the very first installation in what is now a very modest institution, but will not be at some point in the future, and that is an official City of Roswell UFO Hall of Fame. And that will be opening on Saturday. I'll be announcing that with the mayor there and our first inductee. But I am trying to at least sneak out and hear some colleagues who are speaking at the museum. Also, the nightlife is great fun in a situation like this. Roswell is a city with a great concentration of restaurants and nice places to go get a drink, and, you know, all the hotels and motels are wide open as far as their hospitality goes, and most of us really so enjoy getting to hang out into the wee hours and trade stories and argue and talk and compare notes, and, you know, it's a place where the wall is down, too. It's not like you're violating some confidence if you... You know, there's two people that you know from television or that you've heard speak at conferences or watched on documentaries sitting around with some other people. Join them. You know.
They won't scream at you to go away. Well, unless you're irritating. But other than that, well, look, I'll tell you all this, okay? When I first started attending conferences and before I was anybody in ufology, I used to harass these guys, and they put up with me. I mean, I harassed them. If you don't believe me, you can ask Stanton or Darryl or Grant. Poor Grant, the first time I ever met Grant was at the S conference. I sat at his table at the banquet like to drove the man to drink it.
Poor Grant.
I did drive him to drink it, but still. But they're very approachable. They're very nice people in general. They'll put up with a lot. They're willing to entertain and listen to a lot of stuff. I mean, they're there for y'all. That's what they're there for. And I don't know anybody that's on the tour that is not approachable and is not very well-mannered and very well-liked. I just don't know any. There may have been some in the past, it may be some in the future, but as it stands right now, everybody in the field is very approachable. And as Peter said, we are very cordial. We agree to disagree on things that we don't agree on and everything else we work
all
together
the time.
On. That's the way the field is now. I can't speak 10 years ago, but I can speak for the field today. And that's all that matters. That's how the field is today, and y'all should attend, enjoy. You know, listen, my friends in Texas, I know we have a huge listening audience in Texas. Come on, guys. Roswell is like a skip away from y'all. There's 25 million of y'all living in Texas. Get out there and go. I mean, I don't want all y'all to descend on Roswell, but, you know, a lot of y'all should go. And for the guy I heard last year, or no, the year before last, I'm driving to Roswell, you know, I'm driving into town, and I flipped the radio station on, and I must have hit a religious station or something. And this preacher's going on and on about the sins and the evil aliens in Roswell. I had to call into the station, by the way, guys. I had to call into the station. I said, hey, hi, I'm Joe Mattella, and you're a moron. And then while I was on his station still live, and I said, everyone, please attend the Rockwell Festival.
Lightning didn't strike you, Joe?
Oh, no, but I imagine he wanted to strike me. And because, you know, I know how the radio works, so he couldn't get me off in time to shut me up.
Oh, dear.
He got me off after that. He hung up on me, but, you know, it was just funny as hell. It really was. But, guys, it's a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. Okay, you know, I know I've been getting a lot of email that it's not research and orientated, blah blah blah. Look, I got to tell you, first off, we do have the Roswell Museum, and they're very research orientated. I know the speakers of the festival, and they're all from Dennis Balthaser to Richard Dolan. They're all very well, very research orientated.
Yeah, Nick Pope coming in this year, and it's going to be his first trip to Roswell.
Is Richard debuting a book at Roswell?
Say again.
Is Richard debuting a book at Roswell? I mean, is he going to have one in Roswell?
We're hoping to. I spoke to him a few weeks ago. It's going to be like a 600-page book.
Yeah,
and
that's huge.
It's going to come in just on the other side of the wire, that this will probably be the very last talk that Rich will be doing without the book.
Yeah, I know he said it was going to be close.
Yeah. And I don't, you know, it is frustrating. And somebody who thought that they were going to zoom through a book in a year or two, and 9.5 years later, it was done and fully, you know, ready to go. Rich has been, I think, been very smart in going through the final manuscript with a fine-tooth comb, farming out pieces to some specialist research colleagues to get feedback on. I've read a good part of it already, and I'm very impressed with it. But yes, it should be in print. It will definitely be in print this summer, unless the aliens have other ideas, but I think they're going to let them do it. And again, Roswell will probably be the very last venue he'll be speaking at where we won't have copies of it. But this is one, if you're going to buy one UFO book this year, and I hope you'll buy more than that, but this would be the one to add to your library. That is my general feeling at this point. Also, you've reminded me, and just sort of mentioning the museum again, Roswell has a number of museums. They've got a terrific, what I would call a survey art museum, and I say that as somebody whose first career was as a painter, and I still consider myself a photographer and an artist. And it's the kind of museum you occasionally find in different places around the country and around the world where, you know, they can't afford to have the British Museum or the Metropolitan or something or the Museum of Modern Art in New York, but they have a very fine collection of different stuff, you know, representing different periods, schools, types of art, etc. They also have the Robert Goddard Rocketry Museum. Now, most of us that graduated high school remember at one point or another having it beaten into our heads that Robert Goddard was the father of American rocketry or modern rocketry. What we don't remember from those studies is that literally all of his early testing, going back to the 1920s, and it was Goddard's contributions to the field combined with the advanced work that the Germans were doing, that really were the pioneering basics of the American space program. But Goddard did most of his early work just outside of Roswell. So there is not just a terrific specialty museum there of rocketry. There are a lot of early models. It is so exciting to see these amazingly primitive handmade things that were shot up and the lessons learned. It's one of my favorite little special, it's not so little, it's one of my favorite focused specialty museums that I've ever visited in the country. So that in itself is just one more really amazing reason to come to town. And I think everybody knows it's where Demi Moore was born.
You know, we need to get Whitley Strieber to host a conference in New York. I don't know where that came from, by the way. It just popped in my head for some reason while you were talking. You must have been sending me psychico messages or something. I don't know where that came from. Sorry, ladies and gentlemen, I'm not sure where the hell that came from. That was just one of those weird things that came out of left field somewhere. I was going to ask you now, I know at the 60th they were giving tours to the crash site or the supposed crash site.
Yeah.
I used the word supposed crash site.
Yeah.
And I know, so they're going to be doing that this year. That's something else I wanted to ask you. Are they going to have the shuttle running? Or what now? Actually, shuttle, they had like a horse and buggy running back before between the festival and the museum, and somewhere else it was going.
It was my understanding on both of those questions is, number one, yes, there will be car services available to take interested folks out onto the plains to see the sites where these things came down. And also, as I understand it, and I'm not 100%, but I'll say 95%, from morning till night, there will be shuttle buses running back and forth and back and forth right through the town, in whether or not you're at one end of town at where the hotels are clustered, or you're up by the Pearson Auditorium and the New Mexico Military Academy where it's housed, or you're in more downtown at the museum. Those things will be going from morning until night, and they will either be free or extremely modestly priced. We want people who are flying in to not feel that, you know, they've got to have a rental car, and folks that have driven in to not feel they've got to jump in their car and go a mile the next venue to see a movie or a lecture that they want to see, or go to the Convention Center and Visitors Bureau to go to the sales hall. So, yeah, Mass Transit will be running straight through the 4 days of the festival back and forth, and being able to pick you up and drop you off wherever you need to be.
We got direct flights into Roswell now, too. I know at least one airline flies directly in there.
Thank you, American Airlines.
Yeah, it was American Airlines,
Easy to dish on the airlines.
Guys, that's nice.
I'm by some. An American Airlines should be saluted for being visionary enough to now fly in from major hubs around the country. My first trip to Roswell, I don't remember what carrier I flew, but like most folks, I flew to Albuquerque,
Albuquerque or the Texas town. I can't remember the name of it.
And I rented a car, and I drove 4 hours through the desert and arrived in Roswell.
Yep.
Now, last year, big difference. I left either LaGuardia or Kennedy in New York and flew right to Dallas-Fort Worth, changed planes, and flew right into Roswell.
Yeah, I like that idea.
It's not like you got to take a little puddle jumper or anything anymore.
Yeah, that's the reason I wouldn't fly in. I don't like the puddle jumpers, by the way.
Yeah, it's a really nice airport, the kind of airport we have up in Ithaca, New York, where I'm home based now, although at the moment I'm speaking to you from the beautiful backyard of a friend's brownstone in the world-famous borough of Brooklyn, New York.
Oh, Brooklyn, yeah. Y'all hear that, Brooklyn? We got a bunch of listeners up in Brooklyn.
Oh, yeah, forget about it.
Y'all don't go riot at Peter's house now either, okay? They'll be running down the street, can Peter... Yeah, lots of people in Brooklyn. They're crazy as New Orleans.
I love Brooklyn.
Actually, they got the same accent we got, which kind of cracks me up. They say quarter instead of quarter, and they say all kind of stuff like we do. It's just weird.
What are you going to do?
I don't know, some kind of kissing cousins or something. I don't know. But I know we're getting down to about 5 minutes, and before we go to break and bring Alejandro on, but there was something else I wanted to bring up about I know, we covered flying in. Now, Sally Port is pretty much guaranteed to be booked at this point. I doubt you could get a room there.
I think so. Right now,
it's usually booked pretty early on.
Yeah, I would say if you are considering coming to town, I'm delighted for the lodging business there, because they're probably well up into the 90s percentiles of being fully booked. There are still rooms in some hotels, motels, bed and breakfasts, but no joke, they're all going to be gone. And if you're having a problem, what you should again do is go to the city's festival and conference website, www.ufoconferenceroswell.com. And there is an accommodation, as I recall, or question and answer area that you can click on, or listing of hotels. And there is also a Roswell Chamber of Commerce. If you're flat out of ideas, literally, get the number for City Hall and find somebody there that can assist you. It's an amazing team of hardworking volunteers who are behind making all of these amazing events happen. And we are doing our very best to accommodate folks who are making travel plans at the last minute. But this is the biggest week of the year for every single tourist-oriented venue, be it accommodations or restaurants or museums that this city has every year. And, you know, it won't be, I don't think, like 1997, which was, I've only heard of by legend. That sounded way over the top. But there will be thousands of people descending on this great town. And you don't want to miss it if you possibly don't have to.
Yeah, it should be a lot of fun, guys. I'll tell y'all a little secret. I know in the 60s, Guy Malone had set up some things where you could stay at people's homes and stuff like that. So that's something else I might want to check into. You know, so I know there's some other venues there to stay in because, you know, it gets busy down there. And there are three conferences and a festival running. Technically,
yeah.
That's what you have this year. You have three conferences and a festival.
There's a nice sort of round of bed and breakfasts of every description in the town. And I don't know if I have my choice.
Guys, they got rooms there from $30 to $300 a night. So it's just where you
No doubt. No doubt. So if you are interested, if you've got that long weekend off, if you've got a little extra scratch and say, you know, let's go, honey.
That's right.
You can't do it, but you've got to move quick and solidify your plans and make your reservations.
Now, you know, they should start planning for the 2012 festival now.
Well,
guys, 2012, yeah. Okay, I'm really ahead of myself.
Well, there's some folks.
Well, I've been invited to two big parties that are being sponsored for 2012. They're 2012 parties, is what they are.
They're optimistic.
One of them is a friend of mine who's out of New York that's hosting. He's already got 70,000 people that have accepted an invite.
Oh, my God. He's going to have a pretty big hall, isn't he?
I don't know what the hell they're planning on doing. And John Kemp's out of California has 28,000 already signed up. Now, of course, we're 2 years ahead. I'm thinking, what are y'all guys going to do? Are we going to, like, take over the town or something?
Well, I don't want to rain on anybody's parade, but I have a sneaking suspicion that even as the Mayan calendar ends and the end times are upon us and signs and portends are seen in the sky and any number of other cosmic factors come together like the harmonic convergence, that when we move into 2013, there's going to be an awful lot of upset end-of-the-worlders who are in a strange way looking forward to some kind of horrific conflagration. I am not one of them.
No. I take the translation literally as the Mayans translated it. It's the end of life as we know it and the start of the Golden Age. So you can't really have disaster if the Golden Age. So I've always been very skeptical about it. I figure maybe it's an enlightened thing. Maybe ET makes its presence known and changes everybody's mental state. I've never taken it as a physical destruction, but maybe as breaking down the walls on mental or spiritual barriers, something along those lines, and the enlightenment of society. That's how I see it. But, guys, I could be way wrong. They could crack the planet in half. I don't know. We won't know until December 22nd of 2012. and by then, it'll be too late to do anything about it. So, anyway, Peter, give the site one more time real quick before we go to the break.
Yeah. It's www.UFOFestivalRoswell.com. And if you're able to come, find me and say hi. I won't bite.
Well, he might if you pay him for it.
Unless you bite.
I'm just kidding. Anyway, guys, we're going to get out of here. We'll be back in a few minutes with Alejandro Rojas. Please stay tuned. Good evening and welcome back to Through the Keyhole. I'm not Karen Dolan, okay? I might be cuter, but I'm not. No, I'm just kidding. She's. I think she is having weather problems. We haven't heard from her yet tonight. We are waiting to hear from her. Peter Robbins just left us. Alejandro Rojas is on the line with us right now. We'll be discussing several things, starting with Roswell. And one of the questions I asked Peter about the Travis Walton thing. Also, I'm getting to talk a little bit about the Denver conference and his upcoming program airing on the Paranormal Radio Network. But we're going to start with Roswell. So, Alejandro, welcome to the program.
Thank you. It's good to talk to you again.
Yeah, I know I'm not as cute as Karen, but it'll have to do for tonight.
I know. Well, virtually you can't take advantage of the cuteness anyway.
Yeah, that's true too, unless we turn on the cameras. Now, you know, our station does have the ability to video broadcast or TV broadcast. Five of our networks can carry video. I just don't want to scare the hell out of our listeners. They won't come back, so we don't do that. You know, because some of us ufologists are not the prettiest people on the planet. It's not, guys, it's not a requirement to be pretty to be a ufologist. I just thought I'd tell you all that. Bushy eyebrows are required. No, I'm just kidding. I'm giving myself in trouble. Oh, Alejandro, you know, we were talking before we came on about the Travis Walton thing, and I was curious. You know, I'd asked Peter, and he said to ask you, so I'm going to ask you on the air.
Okay.
If there's any way that there might be a Q&A videotape after the movie presentation at the Roswell conference with Travis Walton and Fire in the Sky.
Well, he is going to have his own hour to talk, actually.
Excellent.
On Friday. So he'll have an hour where he's going to go over his stuff. And, you know, we're still working. We're not 100% if these things are going to be videoed yet or not. So we're working with, right now, Jerry Pippin and Robert Miles. Robert Miles did the excellent documentary, Fast Walkers. Mm-hmm. And he might be able to do some filming for us. So that'll be great if we can work that out. But, yeah, we're not guaranteed. So, and then the movie part, here again, you know, it's kind of the same. We're not quite sure on that. So, I know it's one thing where people, you just got to jump in the car and come out. You know, you can camp. I can probably fit maybe a dozen people on the floor of my hotel room if necessary. But you got to come out and see this because I'm excited about seeing Travis talk about the movie, too. I think this is a once-in-a-lifetime type of opportunity.
I agree, Alejandro. I think seeing... you know, Peter and I were talking about it too. I don't think you're going to see this again. I just don't. I mean, I could be wrong, but I, as far as I know, he's never done this before.
Right.
And I don't think he's going to ever do it again. So it's a one in a lifetime chance. And I really think if you're a Travis Walton fan or you're an abduction fan, I really think, gosh, y'all should get out there and see this. I mean, it's killing me because I really want to go, but unfortunately, I'm going to be moving to a new house that weekend.
Oh, really? What a bummer.
Yeah, well, I was scheduled to come down there, and I've been looking for a new house because the one I live in now is Tremongoy, and it's just me and a wife and my son now. Before, we had half a family living here, so it didn't matter. It's a big old six-bedroom house. But so I've been looking to downsize a little bit and get a little bit more cozy, and I didn't think this would happen until after summer, and I worked with a bunch of realtors down here, and one of them called me, and they said, I got the perfect place for you. I went and looked at it, and it's absolutely stunningly beautiful. So I said, I'll take it. And I said, and so we got to move now, and that just bites, but, you know.
Yeah.
Anybody moves knows that and hates it. So that, but, you know, I got lots of people going to be down there, and I got lots of press going to be down there. I know we've got four radio show hosts that are going to be in Roswell doing live interviews. I also have some other friends like Jerry Pittman will be down there, and I think Kevin Smith said he's going to try to get down as well.
Cool.
So, you know, there's going to be quite a few people I know down there. I know more than 100 listeners and members said they were attending this year, so I'm glad to hear them going down. So that's a good thing. So, you know, I like to see these conferences do good. Now, another question for you. I mean, this has been floating around, too, and Peter and I have been addressing it over the last couple of weeks, but I've gotten some emails. He's gotten some emails. Some other people have got some emails about the festival thing and the ufology thing not going hand in hand. And I tried to explain to people that this is the 4th of July festival with three conferences. So I've been explaining it as three conferences in the Roswell festival.
But our speaker conference is the only one that is going hand in hand.
Okay.
We're working with Roswell, the city of Roswell, directly. So it's a co-sponsored thing between the city of Roswell and MUFON. So ours is part of the festival. However, the other ones that are going on are independent. But, hey, you know, the more the merrier, I guess.
Well, yeah, you get down there. I mean, it always drives me crazy with the three conferences going on. Because one, I'm not going to the other one because I'm not even going to mention the religious crazies. But I'm staying away from that one altogether. Usually, I just attend the festival conference, but I do go down and see Julie at the museum from time to time because I know they got, you know, Stan will be there and Daryl and Yvonne. But I also know that they come down to the festival as well and chit chat and hang out and mingle with everybody. So, you know, it seems like everybody gets along real well. I know there's been some problems in the past, but lately it seems like everybody's been getting along real well, and all the ufologists get along real good, and they go back and forth between the two places. And so everybody gets to see everybody regardless who you're going down there to see or who you're going to attend. And I know y'all got some really good guests coming in as far as for the festival part of it. And But, you know, it's one of these things that everybody's been wanting everybody to address is, you know, it's putting this festival spin on serious research. But that's why I was saying this, you know, this is the 4th of July. I mean, they're not understanding that there's two things going on in Roswell. We have this festival, which is also doing ufology, but they're also doing their 4th of July celebration as well.
Right.
And I've just been trying to get that across to people because I've been getting a lot of this email about, oh, y'all going to make fun of ufology. I said, no, as far as I know, nobody's going to make fun of ufology.
Well, I think a lot of people, I think in this field, because I've had to address that a little bit, luckily not much, and not as much as I expected to deal with this, because, you know, MUFON, we're the real uptight, you know, scientists who are in the suits and everything, and when you go to our symposium, it's a bunch of serious people in suits. You're not going to see, maybe you'll see a, you know, ET t-shirt. But mostly you're going to see well-dressed people who are professionals talking seriously about this stuff. Roswell is the complete opposite. But I think the problem is with the giggle factor and, you know, when the media makes fun of this stuff, and there's so many researchers who have been the butt of jokes because conventional media making fun of something that they're covering about these researchers, that the knee-jerk reaction is to be maybe a little oversensitive about that stuff because, really, they're having fun in Roswell, and what's wrong with having fun, you know? I think that's what they're doing a lot, and that means that sometimes they're wearing they're selling the ears, and they're wearing their ET costumes. But like they say, you know, what is it? Mimicry is the most flattering form of something or other. I can't remember phrase right now.
I
feel like our previous president. But, you know, people are having fun, and they're not dressing up because they're making fun. They're dressing up because they enjoy it. They like to have fun. They like to be a part of everything. It's just like a Star Trek conference. People don't dress up like Star Trek characters to make fun of Star Trek, but they do it because they love to be a part of it, and it feels fun, and it feels like they're more of a part of the whole thing.
Well, the last one I was at was the 60th, and I was very skeptical, and I was speaking down there, and I was very, very skeptical about what was going on, and I got to say, I had a blast. I really did. I had a blast, and Free and M took such good care of me. Free and Amy took such good care of me, and I heard they're going to be working there again this year, that it was an excellent conference for me. I got a lot of interviews done. I had a lot of fun. I chased around a lot of people. I was with the Fox Radio Wars. We started a riot between us and Fox and Jerry Pivenar. We all had that whole section of the corner down there taken over. You couldn't pass through there without being hit by some kind of flying something or another. But I had a great time. There were some really good lectures. There was some really good entertainment. The parade was a lot of fun. But when I first, you know, heard about this, I got to say, I was very skeptical. I was like, oh, man, this is going to be just a disaster.
Yeah, me too. I felt the same way last year.
But I was pleasantly surprised. And so even with crazy, what's his name, down there, Mr. Religious himself, but I was still, you know, very pleasantly surprised. So, you know.
And the good thing is even with all the controversy, even with all of the struggles, we have not butted heads with anyone.
Yeah, not
at all.
Real good this year.
So I'm really happy about that. You know, we've tried to reach out, and Peter's done a lot of reaching out and to Julie and letting her know any concerns she has. You know, she can come to us and let us know, and we'll address that as to the best of our ability. So we haven't heard any issue, and lots of her people that she's got over there, you know, we're all buddies.
Yeah.
We're all get along. I'm so excited to see some of our. She's got some MUFON people over there,
yeah,
so we're real excited to see each other. And you know, it'd be impossible to keep these two groups apart. Just like last year, we were having dinner with each other, hanging out with each other.
I can't say. I mean, I know, you know, I know everybody who's speaking at the museum personally. I know almost everybody who's speaking at the festival personally, and I've had dinner and drinks and all kind of stuff with these people, and I know they all get along fine, so I couldn't really see a problem. And I think Julie's problem in the past had more to do with who was running the conference than anything else, which, you know, I'm not going to try to get into tonight, but, you know, I think that's what it was, because when I was down there for the 60th, there was definitely some issues with some of the people involved, but, you know, when MUFON took over this year, I think that changed. I think
she's
different there.
She, is just like fiercely independent.
Yes,
and the city and the state would really like to kind of be one big team, but she wants to remain independent. And I don't think there's a problem with that, you know. If that's what she wants to do, there's some, no doubt, some advantages to that. So she just wants to stay independent, and that's her right to do so. So, you know, let it be. But one great thing about being part of the city, I got to say a couple of things. One thing, you mentioned Free Ward and Amy, and I got to say I've been working with them all year long. We've been working together on this. They have been working so hard. They're some of the unsung heroes behind the scenes on this. They're absolutely incredible. The whole city of Roswell people are wonderful. But I've just been interfacing with Free and Amy, and they are just absolutely wonderful. I'm so happy to work with them.
They were great. Well, them were great. Dennis was there. Dennis Ballfazer, I should just say.
Yeah.
He was great while I was. I mean, I got to say, everybody that I dealt with, because I don't want to leave anybody out at the festival, everybody I dealt with there treated me absolutely fantastic. They got me rooms to do press conferences in. They got me rooms to do media in. They helped us with our tables. They helped us with the lectures. They helped us with everything. And they didn't moan. They didn't gripe. They didn't D-word it. They were very good about everything. And I was quite impressed with the whole group of them. And Free and Amy really impressed me. And I heard this year y'all gave them a little bit more responsibility, so I was glad to hear that as well.
Yeah, it's really been me on the MUFON side and those two on the Roswell side putting this whole speaker thing together. And Peter's actually had more of an overview. He's helping with the entire festival.
Yeah.
So everything going on.
Well,
so
Peter's a workaholic anyway.
Yeah, he's doing a lot of stuff. So, yeah, they've been doing a lot. It's been a lot of fun. And I was going to say one advantage of being part of the city is that we get to be part of the parade.
Yep.
For better or worse. So James and I are going to be in a convertible with our MUFON banners waving to people, and I told some of the people at the home office that they've got to order a tiara for James so he can wear that while we're waving. But that's going to be a lot of fun. And then Chuck Zukowski, who's part of our talk, is him and Bill Dolman, who did the sci-fi digs. They are going to be on another float, so the parade ought to be a lot of fun.
Well, I know it was the year I was there, it was fun. I've been to Roswell, like I said, about four times. I've been to two conferences, and two times I was down there on business. And I had nothing to do with ufology or anything like that. Well, one of it did. I recruited Guy Malone a couple of years ago to host live from Roswell, and which he doesn't do anymore, but he did it for quite some time. But and Guy's crazier than all of us, by the way, but he is a friend, and Guy and I agree to disagree. That's the only way I can say it.
Yeah.
I can't say it any other way, because we definitely have distinctively different views on ufology.
Yeah.
But we get along fine, and he's a lot of fun. Actually, if y'all are down there, Guy is a lot of fun. He's the alien stranger, the guy who dresses up in silver and all. That's Guy Malone,
yeah.
In case I always know that. But I'm not into what they do, period. Now, I have to be honest about that. You know, I have to be upfront about it.
Well, luckily we haven't butt heads with him at all either. We've been working hand in hand with him and his group.
He's good.
Jordan, like we talked about last time you interviewed me, you know, they have a different perspective.
Oh, yeah, they definitely got a different perspective. But hey, to each his own. I'm not going to hate anybody for anything.
Well, and we were all real open at dinner. We actually started talking about some of that stuff. And, you know, Richard Dolan, Karen Dolan, Paula, a lot of people who were there were all around the table, and so was Guy Malone. And we were all talking about it, and you've got some, you know, major intellectuals there at the table who were kind of, actually, Guy had a hard time getting the word edgewise, but he was cool about it, you know. He's open to different ideas, and he understands people don't agree with everything that he says, so he is very cool about it, you know. He didn't get upset or anything. He had a smile on the whole time, and continue to hang out with everybody.
He's got a really good personality, and he's willing to work with people. And he's like the rest of us. He understands that there's a lot of different takes on this, and he will agree to disagree instead of getting into a screaming match or a hollering match or anything like that, which is a good thing. I mean, not everybody in the field is like that, but most of us are. Most of us in today's ufology, and I need to be distinctive here or different here, because, you know, there was a lot more problems in ufology 10 or 15 years ago. There's a lot more ego problems than there is today. And it's not that, ladies and gentlemen, that everybody in ufology don't have big egos, because we all do. You can't be in this field without having a big ego. I'm not going to lie to you about that. But we've all come to a much different understanding now. We all know that we're all working in different fields. Ufology is much more specialized now than it used to be even 5 years ago. And the people that, when they don't agree, they just agree not to, they agree to disagree. And they leave it at that. And, you know,
yeah.
I tell people all the time, you can convince me I may change my mind. I may tell you to go jump up a tree. But still, it's a much different thing than it used to be. And I'm very, I got to say, Alejandro, I'm much surprised by that and very happy about that. And
yeah, well, I think a lot of these people who have disagreed over the past, they've had to get used to each other, too. They see each other every few months at conferences. They read each other's material back and forth, you know, they have to deal with each other on a regular basis. So, you know, you kind of got to get over stuff. And those few people who don't get over stuff, you know, kind of fall to the wayside, where you got to just... And I think it's great. You know, it's just like politics and religion. You know, there's the taboo conversations that people have. But really, we should be able to all sit at a table and discuss anything in a calm manner. We should be able to disagree and have different opinions, but we should be able to discuss these things. And maybe it's something from past generations. I know there's certain topics with my stepfather. He's a wildlife biologist, PhD, Mr. Conventional Science. And there's some things I know if I bring him up, he's really going to explode. And we've had this running debate for a while, and at first he used to get frustrated when I used to tell him there's water on Mars. No, that's ridiculous, rah, rah, rah. Then I told him, well, Europe found water on Mars. Oh, that's Europe. They don't know what the hell they're doing when NASA says it. So then NASA says it. Yeah, but there's not standing water. And okay, well then, and we've got like a $1,000 bet riding on it. So every time I try to collect it, he says, well, there's got to be this and that.
You know, I've actually collected some money
fine.
On that.
Really, you have?
Yeah. Because I had I deal with a couple of different scientists, and this started about 14 years ago. I started on this. They're going to find this and this, and we even got an ongoing bet that they're going to find microbiological life on Mars and other places in the solar system. And recently I have noticed that these guys are starting to try to change their tune. I said, you can change your tune, you still got to pay up. I said, I know, because now, you know, pretty much if there's liquid water, there's life. And they're pretty sure there's liquid water on Mars and several places. And so now they're pretty sure there's some kind of life on there. Of course, now the argument they're trying to give me is that we contaminated Mars with the probes and put life there.
Oh, yeah,
I'm like,
I know.
Don't give me the BS, man. Come on.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's dealing with scientists. I mean, they have, they're also another egotistical group.
Oh, yeah. You know, that's one thing I found in all of this is that, you know, people will be like that at a MUFON conference. Some scientists will introduce them something, and there's some major controversy and some fighting back and forth. And then you'll talk to that scientist, and, you know, one guy I went to talk to, and I was like, man, you know, I'm sorry so many people attacked your work. And he's like, what? He's like, this is nothing like our typical geology conferences or symposiums or any conventional science symposium, because I guess, you know, I hear from all of they go at it hardcore at these scientific symposiums. They're pig-headed people, and they're certain about what they believe, and, you know, they must really have some knockdown blowout type of conversations at these things.
It was about a decade ago, maybe a little longer, I went to a physics lecture at Tulane University. It was five major famous physicists giving a lecture here. Halfway through the lecture, they got into a screaming F and U match.
Wow.
Oh, man, I mean, it was because this one said, your theory's wrong. It got nasty, and I couldn't help myself. I fell out of my chair. I was laughing so damn hard. And finally, one of them, seeing me and this other guy, we were rolling. I mean, Alejandro, we were just rolling. He said, what do you think so funny? I said, it's just nice to know that even brilliant people are morons. And the whole room went quiet after that.
Oh, that's funny.
Well, you know what? They do. They just have big egos, and their science is always the right science. And you know, now that I've had the pleasure of interviewing like Michio Kaku and Dr. Paul Lavallette and Tyson from the museum in New York and a couple of other physicists that I've had the pleasure of interviewing, which I've got to say I've been surprised that they came on UFO on the cover, but they did, and they've been quite forward about their work, and most of them agree that we're not alone and we're going to find life in the universe. And I got Bill Dean coming on in a couple of weeks to talk about the upgraded version of the Drake report. He works for SETI. And I was surprised that he decided that he would come on, and because they got new numbers for the Drake equation, they're going to lower it is what they're going to do.
Cool.
Originally, they said there was Yeah, they're going to lower it, unfortunately.
Even though they're finding more planets than they ever expected.
But they said they're also finding more and more cosmic radiation sources than they ever expected to find as well.
Geez, so we're surrounded by cosmic radiation.
That's what I said. And I said, well, you can lower it if you want. I said, I'm still sticking with the million number. I said, because I really think there's at least a million intelligent life forms. He said, they say that they think there is plus 50 million planets with life on it. They just think the intelligent life is going to be lower than originally estimated. And I said, eventually it's going to have intelligent life.
And that's what some of the conspiracy guys talk about, the Van Allen belt surrounding the planet, so there's no way we could ever leave the planet.
Oh, that's just so funny there.
It's all fake and...
people tell me that all the time. Well, you couldn't... I said, guys, you do realize that we have electronics in space, and electronic doesn't do good with radiation, right? And they're like... Well, that's true, isn't it? And I said, yeah, but none of our satellites rarely ever fall out of the sky. Why is that? Why do we have them all over the place? I said, you ever heard of this thing called shielding?
Yeah.
And I don't want to be rude about it, 100, because
right. Some
people just do not. It's like when they tell me we faked the moon landing. Okay, look, you can tell me everything you want, but know this. Russia and China would have never kept it a secret if we faked the moon landing, ever.
Yeah.
Somewhere in the last 40 years, somebody in Russia or China would have said, oh, no, the Americans faked the moon landing. You've never heard that. You're never going to hear it. And then Japan went as far as taking shots. They had that probe up there taking shots at the different landing zones where we landed on the moon to prove to people,
right. Yes,
we went to the moon, people.
Yeah, and you know, I just know personally too many people that worked on those projects.
Yeah, worked
too
on
many
those
people that are in our field. There are a lot of Apollo engineers, including John Schuessler,
a couple of astronauts.
Yeah, and astronauts that are in this field. And, I mean, they know the government's lying about stuff, and they would be more than happy to tell us, hey, I was actually in a sound studio, but, you know.
You know, I was going to ask you that if Edgar Mitchell was going to be at Roswell this year. I didn't look to see.
You know what? They really tried to do it, but it didn't work out. I've been hearing from people that he's kind of, taking it easy.
Because I got to say, they really racked him over the coals at the X conference. I mean, not in a bad way. They just kept him really, really busy at the X conference because I attended it. They had him doing press all over. CNN had him all over. Different news medias were doing interviews with him. And put it this way, I did 15 interviews there, which was double to the closest person to me, except for him. He did almost 30. And
wow.
You know, when you're doing that kind of interviews in 3 or 4 days, that's just overwhelming. I think he got a little tired, and I think it wore him out a little bit. And I think some of the negative press kind of bothered him a little bit. Even though he got a lot of positive press, I think the negative press, because he's a really nice guy. I talked to him in depth several times. And, I introduced myself because he's a hero to me.
Yeah, and you know, those people are literally, and I think that's a lot of why this secrecy happens. Those are their colleagues. Those are their friends.
Yep.
Those are the people they grew up with. Sometimes they were in undergraduate school, graduate school with these people. They've gone through these incredible things. For those of them who are on secret projects, they've experienced amazing things together. Maybe even they served some time in the military together and saw some action. There are some extremely strong bonds there. And these are their colleagues and their friends. And if you're going to go against the grain, you're going to lose some of your friends, and you may even put your friends in a situation, like I think Edgar Mitchell has, where your friends are going to have to
go one way or the other,
toe the company line and talk bad about you. So so it's rough for these guys. Like you said, he's a hero.
He is, and that's one of the reasons CNN and them had to pick him up and take him serious, and some of the other news medias had. Washington Post gave him a pretty nasty review, but the Post gives everybody a nasty review.
Yeah.
That's what I told him. I said, don't worry about the Post. I said, everybody's in love with Obama. I said, but the Post even gave him a nasty review. I said, so don't worry about it. Post just gives everybody a nasty review.
Yeah,
there's just a bunch of nasty SOBs over there that don't have nothing better to do to criticize. Well, because, I mean, he did not say anything that I would consider to be outrightly controversial, or he didn't attack the government. He just stated his opinion. And, picking on him for that is just moronic. So, I think that's part of it. I think you'll see him in the future.
Yeah. You know, when we're talking about scientists and their work and physicists and, the peer reviews and how vicious they can be at each other, that reminded me of Dr. Claude Swanson, who's a buddy of mine, a colleague. He's going to be speaking in Roswell, and he's actually surprising to me. I didn't know he was going to do this. I thought he was going to talk about the physics of UFOs. He's a theoretical physicist and well-respected. But he's actually going to talk about Stan Romanek's equations because he's been working on them for a long time, and some of them are not understood, so he's got some stuff to release there. But it was really funny because he has his own theory of everything. Michio Kaku, Rudy Shield, everybody's trying to come up with a theory of everything, how everything works, kind of take an Einstein to the next step. And I asked him, you know, what do your colleagues think about your work? And he says, I don't know. I haven't really got exposure for my work yet, and I'm excited to do that because I want to hear what they have to say. And I was like, what do you mean? You've been doing lectures all year long. You've done some metaphysical lectures, SSC, some UFO groups. And he says, well, I know, but those people treat me really nice, you know, even if people argue.
Yeah, that's true.
They're nice people. You know, I really need to go to a physics symposium, which he's planning on doing as soon as he gets a few things tweaked up, but then I'll really find out what people think, you know, what my peers think. So pretty funny talking about, because I know you and I at times probably don't feel like everybody in this field is nice about criticizing each other.
Yeah, that's true.
But compared to, you know, the scientists out there.
Well, there's criticism in the field. Not as much as there used to be, and there are seeming everybody's getting a little less about it. I mean, there's always going to be little qualms and spats. Even I poke at some people every once in a while, I'm not going to lie. But mostly I try to stay out of it. I really do. And, you know, when I get this or that about a particular ufologist or a particular organization, I usually try to stay out of it because, personally, most of it doesn't concern me. I do like to pick up on Jacobs because he's just easy to pick up on. Other than that, I've been being pretty good. I used to pick on MUFON from time to time, but that's because I was a member, so I had the right to do that. But and nothing really bad anyway. You know, I'll never be really vicious because, you know, I got a lot of friends in a lot of places in the field, and I just you know, I got a respect for a lot of people that work in the field. So.
Yeah.
And I believe, and besides, my qualms with MUFON was before you and James got there anyway. So, you know, I got to be fair and give y'all a chance to show me what y'all are doing and turn around. And recently, I've been much happier with y'all than I have been in the past. I'm not even going to lie about that. Well, I probably just gave somebody a heart attack listening to the show just now. But true. I mean, everybody's got their own things they got to be doing. And I do. It's one of the things I do like because, like you were talking about the Denver conference where everybody's in suits, it's one of the things I like about the X conference. I dress in suits when I attend conferences. I own several, about 15 different suits, and I like to dress really well. And I hate to say this, but I think all ufologists should dress really well, and I think most of the participants should, because when press comes in, it adds a lot to the interviews, and it adds a lot. When you walk into a hotel or a conference and you look around and all the ufologists are decked out, all the speakers are decked, I mean, all the guests are in suits and stuff, when it's hard for somebody in the press make fun of that. It makes it really hard.
Yeah.
Other ways they're going to make fun, and Roswell's going to catch some fun, but Roswell is the 4th of July festival, so they can only poke so much fun. And they have, now, I know there's some other conferences that are talking about doing festivals. That, I don't know how that's going to go. I don't know how that's going to work out for them, because Roswell can get away with it. I don't know if anybody else is going to be able to get away with it, but Roswell can. And I don't think it's hurting ufology either, by the way.
It's expensive, and you're talking about a symposium or a conference times 100.
Yeah.
Because really, if you were kind of to segment out the different events going on, you've got a dozen different events going on. It's hard enough, you know, to schedule a conference or something, but let alone, and unfortunately, and I think this is true of any nonprofit type of or any grassroots type of thing, you may have a lot of members.
Yeah.
But you've only got a handful of people who actually bust their back and get their hands dirty.
Boy,
so,
isn't that the truth? Man.
Yeah, see? You can sympathize
with that. Oh, yes, I can sympathize with that. I get people all the time that join the organization. I mean, we've got 15, almost 16,000 members now. But out of that 16,000, I can tell you less than about 50. And this is a true statement, guys. Really get out there and bust their you-know-what.
Yeah. You know, sometimes you'll bust your back to put something together, and you do a good job, you put it together, and then you get a little bit resentful that you have a good crowd, because, you know, at least this has happened to me, where you look over the crowd, and you're like, look at all those 300 people out there. Where were they when we were over here? Why weren't they helping out? You know, and instead of being happy that you have such a great turnout, you're kind of like, oh, these people.
It's true.
It's funny.
It's true, too, because, I mean, it's a lot of work. None of this stuff is easy to do. There's a lot of money involved, a lot of headaches involved, a lot of egos involved. We were talking. I got an email the other day about the Denver conference again about the no women and the no. So I repeated what you told me. I said, well, wait. I said, I was talking about 100. He told me there's 3 women on the board, so I don't hear nothing about women at the conference no more. And the lady who wrote back and said, what do you mean? I said, well, there's 3 women on their board that help pick who's speaking. I said, so apparently they didn't want to see no women. I said, you can't hate on that no more. Y'all got to let that fly. And I said, as far as the abduction thing, I said, I'm going to be frank about this. MUFON is more of a nuts and bolts UFO organization than they are an abduction research organization. I said, it's not that they don't dabble in it, because they do. I said, but in general, they are a nuts and bolts UFO organization. And I said, and that's the kind of conference they're presenting in Denver. And that's the truth in the matter.
Yeah, we've only really recently kind of gotten into that area. And
it's a dangerous area, that's why.
Yeah, and we have... Ron Regeer, who's one of our directors of research, a kind of a co-director. He's also on the board of the Roswell Museum. He is actually putting together an abduction research group, and they're mostly going to look at historics to begin with. So we'll put together some history type of stuff. But, you know, I think it's fun that we're getting into it. One of our shows was heavily about abductions out of our 3 Discovery Channel shows. And there are some ICAR people I know, a lot of sociologists on this panel that Ron has put together.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that some of them are ICAR. And then we also, and it's kind of funny, you know, we do take reports, and you can see plenty of reports mm-hmm. on the CMS where people feel they have had an experience. And when I got a call, it's kind of funny because luckily that the media does take us pretty seriously. And I got a call from the L.A. Times, and I called her back, and we talked. And this was when Kucinich was asked the UFO question. And she said, I got to say, it was kind of funny. When I called you guys, you know, you have this recording at the beginning. And one is, if you've seen a UFO, push 1. If you've been abducted by aliens, push 2. And she just said, I got a chuckle at that's kind of funny, you know. And it doesn't say abducted by aliens, that's what she put it. But it's pretty funny that, you know, she thought that was pretty unique. But luckily she took it seriously, and she wrote an excellent article. She also talked to Grant Cameron from PresidentialUFO.com, who's also going to be a speaker at Roswell. And
Grant's a blast.
She did a great article. I was so happy to see that article from the Times, because I think that was one of the first great articles from major media that had come out in a while.
Well, and that's a good. I mean, any good articles are a plus. They always help out everybody. They help out everybody in ufology. And I keep trying to get this across to everybody in ufology. If we don't work as a team, we're going to get swept under the rug. Because I learned a long time ago, there's no one organization or no one ufologist that are going to change anything. It's going to take a large group of people to get this to change, to get into mainstream to where it needs to be. And if we start fighting amongst ourselves, nobody's going to take this seriously. They're just going to go, whatever, they're all crazy. But I do see a good change. I really do. I mean, I've been seeing a lot of good things in the last decade, and I've been really happy to see what I've seen. And not to hate on the old ufologists, because there's a lot of good ones out there. It's just there's been a changing of the guard. There's a newer, faster, brighter, much more research-orientated group today that are in ufology, and they're more specialized. And, you know, like Richard Dolan's doing historian, and everybody's got their own specialty they're working in.
Yeah.
Whereas it used to be one ufologist would be into 20 things. Well, there's no way you can do really credible research when you're into that much stuff.
Well, and like you talk about with working together, I think it's one of the main reasons MUFON gets criticized, but it's really the main reason we're still here and nobody else is. NICAP, you know, some of these other organizations, APRO, they're gone. And one of the reasons was because they had a strong central organization that dictated how business was going to be ran. And people don't like that. They don't like to be dictated to.
Nope.
And so those, you know, it didn't work. And one thing that MUFON does, which slows us down, no doubt. Those guys were able to run and do a lot of stuff, but we work with the states. We're not a central organization. It's more of a federation.
Yeah.
When a state director has an investigation in their state, they really have almost as much power as James does to make the call.
Yeah.
And James wants them to make the call. You know, we want to make sure the states feel that they're in control, because we don't want a state dictate to a state and then have them leave the group, you know. So it is more of a federation. And that slows us down because, you know, we do have to work at a level sometimes that's a little slower, instead of maybe having some of our aces from around the nation take something on. But at the same time, that inclusiveness and working together, like you said, is what's going to get us to the next step.
Well, that's one of the things when we found that IRR so long ago was, is 11 years ago now, is one of the things we modeled on was y'all, was actually setting up directorships to handle their own states. You know, I asked them to please keep me informed, but I don't want to be a babysitter. And, you know, Dee Andrews, our national director, and she handles a lot of that. But, you know, I know a lot of this stuff is my final call in the end, but still, I don't want to have to babysit. I want to, one of the things I request, first off, we don't let anybody be a director 30 or under. You got to be 30 or over to be a director. Secondly, you have to be self-motivated and a self-starter, or there's no reason to even put you in that position.
Yeah.
You know, and I notice y'all are the same way. I mean, I don't know about the age thing, but I know about as far as what you want, it's pretty much the same thing. And because, you know, we don't have enough time, any one of us, to oversee that many people and make sure they're doing whatever and whatever. All we can do is help train them, get them well trained, and let them go out in the field and do what they're supposed to be doing. And it works better that way. And I notice less people get their feelings hurt that way, less people get their toes stepped on that way, and it just seems to work better. And that is one of the things that we modeled the organization based on. It worked really well for y'all, and it's worked really well for us.
Yeah.
And I've been really pleasantly happy. Matter of fact, we just put in another, four or five directors in the last week.
Great.
And it's been a nice. And lately, I should tell you this, but lately we've been sharing directors. I'm not going to tell you who they are. There's 7, 8 MUFON directors that are now directors for us and for y'all. And I asked them if they thought it was a conflict of interest. I said, because you know I'll be talking to Alejandro and him in the near future. And then they're like, no, it's two different things. I said, okay, don't cause me no problems here. But eventually they'll have to fess up to who they are. But it's.
I don't think anybody's going to mind.
I don't think they are either. I don't think it's going to be a problem there, not even.
Yeah, as long as someone's doing their job, we're more than happy. I mean, if people realize as long as someone's getting the work done, people at the national level are ecstatic.
Yeah, I just think
it's going to open the data pool more.
I really do think it's going to allow for more information to flow between the two, and that's a really good thing. But I know we're getting time here, so
I want to
jump over to Denver right quick, though, and then I'll let you go back to Roswell because I know we're supposed to be talking about Roswell tonight.
Okay.
But I wanted to jump over to Denver. Now, y'all, I got 9 speakers at Denver this year.
We have 3, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11.
11 speakers.
Peter, who just was on, is one of our speakers.
Yes, he told me that. But the conference, I was getting a general sense that the conference was kind of themed this year. Is that true, or?
Well, a little bit. Our main intention at first was to kind of go into the old schoolers, you know, the guys who have been researching for a long time.
That's a good thing.
And, you know, a lot of people talk about Stanton Friedman. We have Stanton Friedman a lot. He's one of our main consultants. And some people in ufology will say, why do you guys have Stanton Friedman all the time? One time I wrote a press release, and it was centered around Stanton Friedman, and people were getting upset. Why do you guys always talk about Stanton? He's old news. But you know what? People love Stanton.
Yeah.
When we did a survey at our symposium of who you would like to see back, and we were just as shocked as everyone else when the number one person from the survey was Stanton. We thought people would be like, we don't want him back, we've seen him too much. No, they were like, we want Stanton back.
He's an excellent speaker. You know, I've done 14 interviews with him, and none of them have been boring, none of them.
The local CBS guy called me up, and he said, you guys are going to have Stanton Friedman? And I said, yeah. He's like, oh, my gosh. He was like a little kid. He's like, I love that guy. Can I get an interview? I've got these windows open. You know, I told him, no problem. Come down He was ecstatic. He was so happy. In fact, if you go to the MUFON YouTube channel, which you can search MUFON HQ, our picture up in the corner is a picture of him, this newscaster who was so excited about Stanton. So we've got him back. But some others, Dr. Frank Salisbury, who's been a researcher for decades, Kevin Randall, of course, who's been a researcher for decades, Ted Phillips.
Oh, I love Ted. He's a great researcher.
Trace landing evidence. He's been around for decades. And then Bruce Maccabee. You know, those guys are our core because they've been around forever. So we really want to get to, this is a 40th anniversary. These guys have been in here a long time. They're icons in the field. And then we have some newer people, Dr. Jeffrey Bennett. He's going to be talking more about kind of astrobiology. Chris Rutowski, another Canadian. So we always got to have our token Canadians. Love Canada. Mark D'Antonio, who's done a lot of great work doing our photo analysis, our photo and video analysis, and he was actually featured in our Discovery Channel television show. We're going to have Peter Robbins, who you just talked about. I'm really interested in his talk because he's going to talk about politics, religion, human nature, and roadblocks to the path of disclosure. And the funny thing is, I know that he was inspired a bit by what happened last year at Roswell when Joe Jordan did the thing
and he got
a little more religious than what people were comfortable with, especially Peter. So we're going to have John Venture, who is a state director in Pennsylvania, who was also featured on our Discovery Channel show because they had a wave of sightings in the last year, a lot of them. And then James is going to come on. And he's kind of going to give new avenues of research in ufology. He's going to talk about what we're doing. He's going to give updates on our Bigelow project and kind of how they see that working and some of the benefits that we're receiving.
Oh, I definitely want to hear that. I've been dying to hear about the Bigelow thing, but I think we just ran ourselves out of time.
Oh, no.
Oh, but anyway, because we got to get Angela on in a few minutes. But quick, give them all the websites before we get out of here.
All right, go to UFOFestivalRoswell.com. Don't mix up those words because you'll go to someone else's site, which is a great site too. But and he's got links to ours, but it's UFOFestivalRoswell is where you go for that. Otherwise, for the MUFON conference, you go to MUFON.com. That's the second weekend in August. So if you want to get out there, you can look at the prizes and the registration. John Greenwald, by the way, is going to be our MC, and he's going to do a talk.
Excellent.
He's great at it. We've had him several years, and we keep bringing him back.
Oh, I love John. We carry his show on the network as well. He carries mine on his network as well too. And, he's got you over there, don't he?
No,
I'll email. Well, you can email him too, but I'll email him too because
it's partially my fault.
He's always looking for new programs to put over there. I fall by time. He's keeping everybody. He's got all my archives, but he's fantastic. I love John, and I just love him for all the Freedom Information Act work he's done. I mean, he's probably moved the field himself quite a few years by himself. He's just an ambitious young man, and he started. He was like 16 when
he started. He's done some of the greatest interviews on history, or helped with the production of some of the greatest documentaries on History Channel too.
Yes, he is. But Alejandro, I want to thank you for being on tonight. Guys, no, I am not Karen Dolan. I have been guest hosting for Karen because she has had weather problems at her home. I just wanted to tell everyone thank you for tuning in. We're going to get out of here in just a second. Angela, hey, I see you in the room. Hi, Angela. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm talking about Angela Joyner, who's going to be following us very shortly on the Joyner Report. Guys and girls, I want to thank everyone again for tuning in. Alejandro, thanks. Any parting words before we get out of here?
No, I better hurry up and get in the chat room, too, because I didn't do that last week, and Angela
she's tough,
gave me
buddy.
Some words.
Angela's a tough mister. She better not be messing with. Oh, God, she's going to kick his butts. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, we'll see y'all in a few minutes with Angela. Everyone, please stay tuned and hang on.